Welcome back, Mighty Vandals, to Tubs of the Club, brought to you by Snake River Stampede Whiskey. I will tell you a little bit more about that later on in the show. We are the Idaho Vandals affiliate on the Big Sky Podcast Network. As always, well, not always, because I'm really not here half the time. I am your host, Dallas Hammer. No producer Martin tonight, so it's going to be mostly amateur hour. Brian, are you ready for amateur hour?
Yeah, dude, look over my left shoulder. What do you see? Of course.
I see on my screen, I looked at your left shoulder, I was like, that's a doorknob, Brian, that's not the duster. And then I was like, ah, your left, not my left. We are off to a great start, folks. Guys, we're just going to jump right into it after I give a quick thought on Sacramento State. Man, I am so gutted I could not be there. TJ, Kara, congrats on your wedding, but I still kind of hate both of you a little bit for making me miss that game. Watched it back on replay. Watched the first half live, communicated in the Discord with some folks. Second half, I ended up watching after the wedding when I was maybe not sober, and then had to rewatch it again the next day to really kind of remember it. Man, Idaho is a wagon, everybody. If for some reason you are tuning into Tubs at the Club for the very first time, Idaho football is back. I think it's pretty safe to say that. Texas, maybe not back. Idaho, back. Brian, any thoughts on my hot take here?
No huge pushback. Only thing I want to talk about a little bit is just talk about the offensive line from the reaction episode, which is to say, easily that could be like a 10-minute discussion just about that game. Which, to further clarify, obviously we did see Giovanni on the run quite a bit, but also in the second half, in particular towards the close, Idaho's line was great protecting the run game. Thing to point to is that final drive, final last, 4 minutes and almost and like 54 seconds, whatever, when everyone in the building knew Idaho was going to run every single play and Sac State could not do anything to stop it. So just want to bring that part up, because in the post game, which Martin and I went about 50-ish minutes in the post game covering the Sac State Idaho game, which if you haven't listened to it, I think it still helps you for this game. So give it a shot at Tubs at the Club. But that's about it, man. I really think the game last week portends well for Idaho, but Eastern is, which we'll talk about in a second, Dallas, spoiler alert, they're a lot better than people thought they'd be at the start of the year.
Yeah, just to buttress that point on the offensive line, Giovanni did take the three sacks. It's just, you want to see the quarterback upright. He did have to move around a lot in that first half, but ended up with 178 rushing yards, 4 yards a carry on the team average there. That can't really complain about that, especially when you're going up against who were the number four team in the country who had just beat an FBS Pac-2/ACC school. So
yeah, Sac State gets the quarterback. That's what they do.
Yeah, like you can't really be that unhappy about it. So let's get into it, guys. It is Idaho versus Eastern Washington week. Brian, we have talked about Aaron Best a lot. We have made jokes about maybe Aaron Worst. Last year was a really, 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 really bad year for Eastern, and it looked like maybe one more year of that and pull the plug and start this program over, even though it's had this continuity for so long. Aaron Best, obviously having been Bo Baldwin's offensive line coach, offensive coordinator, run game coordinator, played at Eastern, was a grad student at Eastern, has only had 1 year of coaching outside of Eastern. All of that to say, Eastern 19th in the country. They are 2-2. They lost to number 2 North Dakota State in the first week of the season, 35-10. Didn't look great doing it. To Kyler Neal's point, they did miss a week of practice because of the smoke here in Spokane. Very next week, they go up to Fresno State. They lose in double overtime to FBS Fresno State. And then they beat Southeastern Louisiana, Vandal rivals, 40-29 on the Inferno. And then they beat UC Davis on the road last week to get here to number 19 in the country, Brian.
Yeah, well, look, you're burying a little bit of the lead, which is, well, are not exactly burying. So Eastern picked up 28 transfers in the off season. Some of them came pretty dang late. That 28 transfers, it's a combination of both of FBS, FCS, and D2/JC transfers. The split being 10 from FBS, 5 FCS, and 13 from either D2 or junior college. And look, you referenced Aaron Best seeming like he was on the hot seat to start the season. yeah, his seat's cooled. He made the right call. This is, if you watch this team, the big takeaway last year when Eastern visited Idaho was they did not look like an Eastern team talent wise. That's not the case. The defense is a lot faster, which you'll get into the specifics in a second. The secondary was the relative strength of the defense last year. The secondary still is the relative strength this year, but I would not really rely on Eastern's stats on the ground right now as a sound basis of what their run defense is, because look, Dallas ran through the schedule. The Eastern's had no weeks off. The worst team they played was Southeastern Louisiana, a team that beat Idaho in the playoffs last season, a team picked to win their conference preseason. So look, they've got, athletically, they're much better on the defensive side. And then again, you'll get into offensive specifics, but this team, the play calling, the quarterback position, how the team's using the wide receivers, it looks a lot like the 2018 Eastern Washington team. I'm not saying it's not at that talent level, but that template, you know, this for sure, Idaho's going up against a team in Eastern that we should understand is fringe playoffs right now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Captain 58 jumping in to say SLU just lost to a bad Southland team, Houston Christian. Either the Eagles broke them or maybe they're just not as good as they were last year. Patty Firk saying, I don't think SLU is that good either. That's the weak link in North Dakota State, FBS, Idaho, UC Davis. Like they have gone through the ringer, and to come out with two wins is quite impressive.
Yeah, so Jason Eck brought this up in his presser. Eastern's two wins are against two of the teams that beat Idaho last year in CELA and UC Davis. And hey, to Patty's point, look, obviously teams turn over each year, but both of the point being, Eastern has played only teams that are worst case scenario, kind of okay, best case scenario, very good FCS or pretty dang good FBS. And Eastern has either won or been pretty competitive in every game.
Brian, we usually jump into the offense first and talk defense, but I want to talk defense first because you did mention the transfers. There are seven seniors starting on this defense, and there are four seniors in the front seven that are transfers. Excuse me, three seniors and one freshman in the front seven that are transfers. DeMarcus Johnson, defensive end, transfer from Fresno State. Defensive tackle Isaiah Perez, BYU transfer. Their linebacking core has been completely rebuilt, three seniors there. They are starting Adam Cohen, who is a UCLA transfer, and then maybe their best player on the defense, at least statistically, Ben Allen. He's their leading tackler. He's got 32 tackles, 4.5 tackles for loss, and a sack. He started every game at Bucknell the last two seasons and was second team All-Patriot League in 2022. So they have absolutely rebuilt that defense. They're a lot stronger than they were last year. I mean, last year was rough. It was Jeff Kopp in his first year as the defensive coordinator. It was his third year on the staff, fourth year this year, second as the DC. Last year, they were last year near the bottom in almost every statistical category of the Big Sky, except for red zone defense. Interestingly, they were actually fourth in the conference in red zone defense, but that was because they had given up so many opportunities in the red zone that it ended up kind of fluctuating the stats. They ended up allowing more successful conversions than every other team but Idaho State allowed attempts. Last year's defense, complete poo-poo garbage. I mean, they were on fire like that stupid field. It's not really that stupid. I actually kind of like it because I hate Boise State, and I think the red thing is a nice little jab. Anyways, this is a lot different defense than we've seen, Ryan. They're still doing the 4-2-5 thing. They still have, shout out to the best name in college football, Cage Skank playing nickelback. I mean, that's like Tubbs 101 right there. Cool name in nickelback. You got it. But Brian, is there anything that stands out to you about this defense that you really want to harp in on?
Oh yeah. First off, it's cornerback Marlon Jones, preseason All Big Sky. He made second team All Big Sky last. No, he did not make second team All Big Sky last year. Preseason All Big Sky this year, Marlon Jones. If you watched the UC Davis game, Eastern made Miles Hastings, who relative to last season's Big Sky quarterbacks was one of the top two. I think Hastings made first team All Big Sky as quarterback in 2022. Hastings threw two picks against the team, looked like he was a pretty pedestrian dude. And that was one of the things that stood out to me, is in particular, the secondary of Eastern. It's not the best in the Big Sky. It's easily in the top half. The Eastern's going to try to have teams make mistakes. They're going to capitalize on turnovers. I mean, right now, they've forced more Big Sky turnovers than Idaho, which is not a hard number to hit at this point. Idaho's forced one, and that was a desperation fumble against Sacramento State. But no, it's the intersection of the secondary and also the linebacking core is a lot stronger this year, and it needed to be. So the middle of the field against Eastern last year was essentially Fenway Park with no outfielders. That's not the case this year. No, Eastern is a much more physical team, like Patty Firks is staying in the comment section. And Patty specifically calling out Ben Allen as part of the improved linebacking core and tackling ability for Eastern, which Patty brings up tackling ability. Eastern's defense is much more physical, much more fast this year than what we saw last year. I'm not going to call it like exactly at Sac State level, but they're not that far off, at least in the secondary and linebackers, with being able to compete with Sacramento State.
Yeah, for the people that like to follow Eastern just because they are the, you know, the closest team to Idaho, anybody might remember Derek Tomasini, former Vandal, played in 6 or 7 games his first few years here, transferred to Eastern, was a starter all year long for that Eastern team at the middle linebacker spot. I think he ended up with something like 64 tackles. That ended up having a decent statistical year, but he can't see the field right now. I think that's what you can say about this Eastern defense is they have absolutely brought in a bunch of those transfers with the intention to start. Again, Tomasini has 9 tackles in 4 games after he ended up with 60 some in starting all of last year. No shot at the kid, but it's obvious that they saw their weaknesses. They went in and improved them tremendously. Now it'll be interesting to see if this works as a year-to-year thing, because again, we're talking about you have to replace 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 guys in the front 7, 3 linebackers, 3 defensive linemen. Like that, this is going to be a transition year for Eastern after this, but this is their year to strike gold. And Brian, we've talked about the defense enough in my eyes, because Eastern is not ever known for their defense. At this point, they have improved their defense to just good enough. But the big thing for me is the quarterback play, Brian. That's what the big change has been this year to me.
Yeah, Kikoa Vesperis looks – I do not mean this as a put-down whatsoever. He looks like JV Eric Berrier in that Vesperis can run pretty well. He's absolutely got an arm. There's accuracy issues at times. Like he's going to miss some of the deep balls, and some of the misses are not that close. But Vesperis, because he's a threat on the ground, and he's honestly a better passer than Gunnar Talkington was. Eastern gets to go to a lot of like the 2018 bread and butter, which is they throw a good amount of screen passes to try to get their receivers who are talented. I don't think they're Idaho level talented, but Eastern might have the second best group of wideouts in the Big Sky. Best likes to get them in one-on-one so they can break plays. And those screened short passes set up deeper strikes for guys like Efton Chisholm III, who's former All Big Sky third team in 2022. Nolan Ulm is a guy who's been pretty good for Eastern in the receiving room, but really the number 2 and 3 receiver, it seems like it rotates. You know, Anthony Stell, he has 20 catches on the year, 191 yards and a touchdown. But him and Ulm seem like the number 2 or 3, kind of depending on the day. Chisholm III for sure is their top target. He already has 30 catches this season, which that's more than Hayden Hatton has. It's right around that same ballpark, but that's the level that Efton Chisholm III is targeted as. And you know, that sets up the run game too, which I'll let you handle the running backs a bit. I think easily Eastern's more of a threat to me through the air than on the ground. But Aaron Best he's a former O-line coach. He's going to want to have as close to 50-50-ish run pass split as he can. He's just also not a moron, so he does lead with whatever helps Eastern pick up wins.
Patty Firks in the comments saying the defense has been more consistent for the Eagles than the offense this year. Unfortunately, we have not broken Patty of his Eastern fandom, so please, guys, if you know Patty, even if you don't know Patty, go harass him, remind him he is a student at Idaho. So Patty, V's up, baby. But Eastern does have a pair of pretty solid running backs as well, Tuna Altair and Justice Jackson. Now, Altair is the starter. He's got 43 carries, 109 yards, touchdown. Not anywhere near as impressive as Justice Jackson, 36 carries for 232 yards and 3 touchdowns. but both of those guys are pretty solid. We've seen them before, going to continue to see them again. That is, again, I think Altair's a sophomore and Jackson's a junior, so going to keep seeing those guys. This, Brian, I know that Vesperis hasn't necessarily exploded onto the scene. 64% of his passes completed, a little over 1,000 yards, 5 touchdowns, 3 picks. But you can see in his play, he's getting a little bit better as the year is going on. And it feels like his ceiling is so much higher than Gunnar Talkington's was last year. Yes, Patty, the defense might be much more consistent, but it's the offense that scares me. Last year, I didn't think Eastern would be able to put up the points to hang with anybody, much less Idaho. This is the year that it's like, hey, that the defense will get it done at times, but the offense might be able to make it click instead of game manager Talkington out there.
No, you're right. Look, and want to just add in terms of running room, Altair is he's their power back. You know, you referenced the stats for Altair not as impressive as they are for Justice Jackson. Justice Jackson gets a lot more carries along the outside. And again, to be honest, Justice Jackson, if you watch Eastern, is clearly the more effective rusher. But of course, Altair does help set up a little bit of what Justice Jackson, his rushes are going to be. And, you know, just make sure that they're better running back doesn't get quite the same type of pounding that he would if, you know, they were treating Justice Jackson as the lead back. One thing I want to point to stat wise, and look, you and I are relatively close here in that we think people shouldn't read too much into the first 4 game stats for any player when you look at what the schedule split is in the Big Sky. But with Vesperis, look, he leads the Big Sky with 1,057 passing yards in 4 games, which you guys can handle math. That's a little over 250 per game. He's also thrown 3 picks, but whatever. What I want to bring up, he's thrown the ball 163 times, which is it's 41 more passes than the next closest quarterback in the Big Sky, which would be Miles Hastings. As comparison point to Idaho, Vesperis has 105 completions. Giovanni McCoy has 107 attempts. That's how much Eastern has been relying on the pass game this year. And with that volume of passes as a discrepancy between McCoy and Vesperis, the yardage accrued between those two is less than 100 yards in Vesperis's favor, which is more just to reinforce. Eastern does throw a lot of short, they spread the field and throw a lot of short passes. Vesperis can hit, he can connect deep, but look, his longest pass this year, he's thrown one pass for 36 yards as his longest completion so far. So the bigger concern with Eastern offensively is trying to make sure that those short passes don't break for 15, 20 yard gains, because that's kind of been the bread and butter of what Vesperis does and how Eastern's been effective scoring the ball this year.
Well, and that's the whole reason that works is because of their offensive line. Their offensive line is one of the better ones in the Big Sky.
It's not Montana, but
oh, we'll get to that, Brian. We will get to that. Their offensive line, though, very experienced. Wyatt Hansen's the leader there. He's started over 30 games in his time at Eastern. He's the left tackle now. He's played all over the line. But between they have 4 guys that have been long-term starters there. And then their center, Jack Seeley, is a transfer from Diablo Valley College. Otherwise, outside of, again, transfer junior in from another school, the other 4 guys have all started more than 10 games apiece. Like, this is probably the most experienced offensive line you're going to see until Montana State. This is where Eastern is going to try to get things going. That's why that screen game works, because their offensive line is one hell of a unit.
Do we want to spend 10 or so minutes on Eastern's all Big Sky, I quote, super senior punter?
The Alex Spoatman Memorial Special Teams talk begins and ends with that sentence. Let's rip the Band-Aid off. I don't know how it's pronounced, but
let's go with Nick Kokich.
It looks like Kokich to me. So yeah, let's talk all about it.
I don't have anything to add. Nick Kokich Kokich/Kokich was first team All Big Sky last season. No, he was third team All Big Sky last season. He was preseason All Big Sky this season.
Yeah. Cobber, if you are listening to this podcast right now, I apologize for mispronouncing all of your players' names. This is more for fun and laughter than it is for being actual stat guys.
Which is to say, you're welcome. So, Dallas, we probably need to talk about the Idaho end of this in a second, but I'm assuming we want to hit a sponsor first.
Absolutely, Brian. If you are looking for a great all-inclusive week-long vacation, don't look past your backyard. I didn't put the video up. I am sorry, Colin. I'm going to commit to this. If you are looking for a great all-inclusive week-long vacation, do not look past your backyard. Hughes River Expeditions has been vandal-owned and operated since 1976, and they're ready to take you on the vacation of a lifetime. Enjoy a multi-day trip down the Middle Fork of the Salmon, the main Salmon River of No Return, the Salmon River Canyons, or the Selway. You can even check out special trips like one to see the Perseid Meteor Shower, camp on pristine beaches, run amazing whitewater, hike scenic trails, spot wildlife, soak in the beautiful natural hot springs, and fish the most remote stretches of river in the entire USA. Just bring your clothes and let HRE handle the rest. Grab a paddle, catch dinner, and ride the bull all throughout the Gem State. Call them now, 800-262-1882, or check them out at HughesRiver.com. Brian, one other thing that Patty mentioned, Eastern's long snapper is an Idaho transfer, as is Seth Carnahan. I did forget to mention those. We obviously mentioned Tomasini, starting right tackle Seth Carnahan, former Vandal offensive lineman, and then Tyson Jacobson, Eastern's long snapper, also a former Vandal. So there we go. A little bit of that Ty Graham former Vandal to Eastern player connection going on. Hopefully none of those guys come back to cause any lasting damage on Saturday.
So we've been talking favorably about Eastern for a little bit because look, Eastern's top 25 and they've been surprisingly good. Obviously neither of us assume Eastern has the advantage in this game because look, Idaho's top five good. So what needs to go well for Idaho is actually a relatively simple discussion. Idaho is the better team. So I think Idaho offensively, even though Eastern's stronger, it's really going to be kind of the pick your poison day. I think Eck is getting increasingly comfortable with the offensive line opening holes for Anthony Woods. I mean, you saw Anthony Woods rushing well over 100 yards against Sacramento State, a good Big Sky defense, and Idaho is able to rush. I think Idaho, in spite of Eastern being strong in the secondary, is probably not that concerned about Eastern's DBs matching up with Idaho's receivers because truly, I mean, you've seen it in multiple games. Idaho has now, counting TJ Ivey as tight end, has about four guys who are look like they're fine picking apart a defense, and Javonte McCoy just doesn't really miss. Even under duress, man, like in the Sac State game, he had six incompletions. About two of those were purposeful throwaways. So it would be more about what Idaho, in my mind, has to do wrong to throw this game away than it is what Idaho needs to do to win. Because what Idaho needs to do to win is what they've done against FCS teams so far, and Nevada, which is they're inventive offensively. They beat you both on the ground and through the air. So the line just needs to make sure Javonte McCoy has enough time to either stand in the pocket or at least enough time to be able to then create the play, which we know McCoy can make. And then, look, Idaho also has been strong defensively, so part of it is avoiding the turnover bug that Idaho's had the last few games, particularly at the receivers, is I guess where I'm looking. Because, I mean, just another thing in favor of Idaho, we both feel good about the Vandals defensively. They're not yet forcing turnovers. At some point, and it's not that Idaho's doing like something shitty to not force turnovers, it's some of the passes that would have been picked last year, like guys aren't just coming away with them yet. You know, that's eventually going to change. But Dallas, I guess from your end, what does Idaho need to look to do to be able to exploit this matchup with, hey, crowd right now, according to Eastern Washington, is going to be at 90% capacity at a minimum as far as ticket sales?
I mean, I think the comment section on the YouTube channel is nailing everything here. There's too many guys to name that have all mentioned Idaho's got to control the turnovers and they've got to control the dumb penalties. Idaho is the third most penalized team in the Big Sky. 25 penalties for 262 yards. Not great when you see like Weber State and Northern Arizona, the schools with more penalties than Idaho, only a fraction of yards more, because Idaho is constantly committing the really egregious ones. That's a big problem. That's going to have to be cleaned up. And then again, like you said, Brian, the turnovers is a big problem. The fact that Idaho's defense hasn't been able to pull any is concerning. I'm hoping we see that change, especially if the wind gets a little blowy and chiny. Hopefully that's going to happen, but that's to me, that's where everything is going to hinge on for Idaho specifically, minus just being that, hey, don't turn the football over and clean the game up. Like, yeah, it's not brain dead, because it's absolutely what needs to happen. But that's the easy talking point when you're talking about the top four team in the country. Like, there's not a lot of weaknesses with Idaho now. Like, these are the things that you talk about, because it's not like back in the day, like, hey, Zach Borish has to run for 350 yards against this Eastern team to have a prayer at winning. That's not Idaho anymore. What I'm going to be looking for, Brian, is for Javonte McCoy to throw all over this Eastern secondary. Second leading tackler, their best safety, Kentrell Williams Jr. He got hurt last week at UC Davis, left the game in the boot. He is not on the two deep this week. However, the guy that's stepping in to replace him, their third safety, Drew Carter, has 5 pass breakups already this year. So their secondary is certainly much improved. But like you said, Brian, when you're trotting out all Big Sky receiver Terrez Trainer as your third option, who's getting a couple targets a game, a couple catches a game, all Big Sky receiver Jermaine Jackson, all Big Sky receiver, honestly, one of the best players that's ever going to put on an Idaho uniform in Hayden Hatton, FBS transfer Teron Ivey Jr. We all think Jordan Dwyer's got a whole bunch of legs underneath him. The pass catchers, are going to be the story here. Eastern's obviously going to want to score points. I know that they have really led with defense this year, but historically, Eastern scores a ton. Idaho, obviously one of the better offenses in the nation. That's what I'm looking for, is Javonte McCoy to throw the ball all over the inferno.
I'm looking for Hayden Hatton to have a bit of a breakout game too. Hatton hasn't disappointed by any means throughout the season. You know, 7 catches last week against Sacramento State. But there's a touchdown record that I hope Hatton breaks this week. I certainly don't want him to have to wait for the next Idaho home game against Montana on October 14th. I know that the team purposely spreads the ball out. And look, I mean, that's an effective strategy. Look at the team. They're 3-1 with their only loss to a Pac-12 team. So there's no complaining about that. But it took Hayden Hatton about 4 games or so to really explode last season. Different context. But you know he has to have, he's going to have a game or two pretty quick where he reminds everyone why Hatton's the most talented wide receiver in the nation. One thing I do want to note, shifting to Idaho defensively, Vandals are going to be without Mervin Kenyon III at safety. So we're going to see, Tommy McCormick's already there. McCormick played great last week. Idaho named him their defensive player of the week. It was announced on Twitter yesterday through the official Vandals account. So McCormick is still doing all Big Sky things, but we're going to see a little bit more Kyron Beecham and Dwayne McDougal as well. Both of those guys have looked fine in the safety so far, but hey, Eastern's going to probably want to test some guys who are a little further down the depth chart if they know they're playing. And then Malachi Williams will also not be, according to Jason Eck, will not be playing on the other side of the edge opposite. God damn it, I'm drawing a blank on the name. The transfer Montana Tech. He has a hyphenated last name.
Keyshawn James Newby.
Keyshawn James Newby. I think the name Keyshawn, I'm like, Brian, don't talk about Keyshawn Johnson. That was 17,000 years ago. Keyshawn James Newby, who has looked...
Anytime you want to turn this into a Keyshawn Johnson podcast, I'm game. Yeah. Let's do it.
Sorry, Keyshawn James Newby. Well, he's the guy I picked as player of the game for Idaho on the defensive side. He's been great, but opposite him, Malachi Williams is going to be out as well. So look, there's going to be a little bit of Idaho's depth tested again. But on paper, this is less of a test than this previous week was against Sacramento State.
Brian, the one thing that I don't think have talked well enough about, and Patty Furks mentioned it here, his keys for Idaho, because he's jumping in on the Idaho side here, guys. So let's support him here. Turnovers can't happen for sure. Timely defense. Eastern's going to move the ball. Going to have to make stops in the red zone for sure. Anthony Woods is going to have to break some tackles to turn into some big plays. I don't think we have talked enough about how excellent Anthony Woods has looked this year. Anthony Woods currently 66 carries, 382 yards, four touchdowns to a crisp 5.8 yards a carry. We talked at the beginning of the season of like, hey, the offense isn't really running the ball as well as we'd hoped. You know, there's a 93 yard run, and then outside of that, it was like 1.7 yards a carry. But yeah, sure, you take off the 93 yard run, and this looks a little bit different. But I thought Anthony Woods looked excellent last week. And if I remember correctly, Brian, he was banged up. We weren't even sure if he was going to play. And then he went out there, put up a great game. Feels like, as all this talking that we've been doing about Hayden Hatton having a huge game, Giovanni McCoy throwing it all over the field, this certainly could be an Anthony Woods puts up 200 yards, and this is just a completely different style of ball game.
Yeah, Woods is the number two rusher in the Big Sky on the season right now, trailing only Lan Larrison of UC Davis. And Woods is doing it to 5.8 yards per carry against, if it's not the toughest four-game slate in the Big Sky, it's, you know, top two or three. It's certainly, Idaho certainly played a tougher set of four games than UC Davis has so far. So, no, dude, you're right. Anthony Woods was, he was electric for a lot of the game against Sacramento State. And, you know, we talk about the passing game because Giovanni McCoy is good and efficient and the receiving room is pretty damn talented. But also, we know Jason Eck wants to run a little more than he wants, than he's going to pass. He wants to split, but Aaron Best has always been unapologetic and open about, hey, I want to do about 50-50. Eck doesn't use the percentage language, but you can tell from his play calling, he wants it to be about 45-55 or 40-60, somewhere in that range of 40% passing to around 60% rushing. And if the relative strength of Eastern Washington's defense is a secondary, well, the relative weakness is up front. I mean, Lan Larrison did beat the hell out of Eastern to 255 yards before he went down. You have to expect Jason Eck is going to look at that game tape and think, you know, what's Anthony Woods' version of doing that? Because that's Lan Larrison going down is part of why Eastern held on for that narrow win. And again, you have to expect Jason Eck, who is very committed. And by the way, I really want to pat Idaho on the back for this. The team is incredibly disciplined about always drawing the play clock down right around to one. And Idaho doesn't have issues with having to burn 700 timeouts to prevent delayed game penalties. Idaho knows what they want to be, and they're incredibly disciplined about doing it. That's why they're a top five team. And that you have to think for Jason Eck, that template of run the ball, set up the longer passes, but just put Eastern's defense on ice is absolutely something that Idaho can and will try to do this weekend.
Ryan, we are joined by a Vandal legend in the comment section, Ryan Phillips, jumping in to say, Woods looked 85% to me and still had a great game. If anybody knows football, it's Ryan Phillips. I can't disagree with that statement. I can't agree with it anymore.
Well, you stepped up. You forgot. I mean, because you were busy. Ryan Phillips was against his. I mean, he didn't have any say in this matter. Ryan Phillips was unofficially drafted as a Tubbs correspondent every time he posts his own research before a Vandal game, so we can pretend it's ours. Ryan, thanks for joining in the show. Thanks for everything you do for University of Idaho. But no, dude, you're. I think Ryan's right. I mean, you referenced we weren't even 100% sure Woods was going to go, and yeah, he beat the shit out of Sacramento State. That was an all Big Sky level performance from Anthony Woods, and a big reason why Idaho picked up the win they did.
Yeah, I to kind of put a button on this, I would expect to see. And one last comment, I want to jump in there, Jason Mayer. Woods' stats, don't forget, against two FBS teams and a top 10 FCS defense. So those are some pretty impressive numbers against three of the better defenses you're going to see all year long. Brian, I think just to kind of put a final button on this point, Lan Larrison put up 255 yards before he went out. Like, it's one thing to say, yeah, hey, we, you know, throw the ball. Hey, Anthony Woods could look great. Eastern has proven that they struggle stopping the run. Patty Ferks has been in the comment section explaining the gap scheme and how just a little bit of vision can turn into a huge run. We've obviously already seen Woods has the ability to read the field and make the correct cut and take a ball very, very deep. This is the more we talk about this, Brian, the better I'm feeling about Idaho's chances this weekend on the road in Cheney. any final thoughts from you before we move on to the next stage of the show?
I do have one question for you. Just got to talk the name. Chisco Cup. You have to expect there's going to eventually be some other name. Like, I wouldn't be shocked. Some like the Rolling Hills rivalry or something that's like corporate sponsor friendly. But until it's not the Chisco Cup, it's the Chisco Cup. How do you feel about that?
I don't love it. I have to be honest. I don't love it. I don't know if I have a better name for it at the moment. It's certainly better than Red Scare rivalry. I hated that one. Chisco is fine.
How about we don't go with the one on the screen that Kevin just suggested?
I think we do that. I say we do it. That is for anybody listening. Make sure you don't have any kids in the car. I will give you 5 more seconds. Your 5 seconds is up. Tussle on the tampon. Love that, Kevin. I think we should roll with that.
I don't. Hot take. I'm fine with the Chisco Cup. I feel like it fit with when Jason Eck is at least talking about it. I think it works with just the personality Eck has and the kind of jokes he seems to be into. In the comment section, we've also got Mark Triplepiece with the Wheat Bowl. We have Nate Mink echoing the all-time name, Kevin. I apparently that's the unofficial name now, Kevin. Thanks a lot. We also have, I thought we had another one on here, man.
I have it on the screen, Brian.
The Salt Bowl. Thank you. That's what I was looking for. Ryan Phillips, again, contributing everywhere for Tubbs at the club, whether he wants to or not. Okay, you get a power ranking before we shift to picking the game, Dallas. We have the Wheaties Bowl. We have the Chisco Cup. You have the Salt Bowl. You have the Jason Mayer Zips Tub of Fries. Or you have Kevin's Gold Standard. What are you going with?
I mean, I got to go with Jason Mayer's Zips Tub of Fries. You guys would not know this because you can see that I have this incredibly slender figure complete with just one single chin. Love me some Zips fries. Love getting a tub of fry sauce. I'm a big Zips guy. So anytime you can throw a local fast food vendor into a bowl, or you know, it's not a bowl, but you know what I mean? Anytime you can throw it in, like let's do it. Zips Tub of Fries for me all the way.
Before we pick the score, we have to hear from our presenting show sponsor, Snake River Stampede Canadian Whiskey. It doesn't matter which option you guys go with. There's the Snake River Stampede, which is $25.95 at Idaho liquor stores. That double barrel finish is first fill bourbon, then Oloroso sherry. Or if you want to buy the small batch, which is aged an additional 2 years, and instead of it starts in first fill bourbon, but it finishes in ex-Canadian whiskey casks. Either one of those are pretty damn good buys at Idaho State liquor stores. I buy the Snake River Stampede itself by the handle exclusively, which Jason Mayer knows because when I gave him a fifth, I had to give it to him in a bottle that I refilled, which by the way, Jason Mayer, I should have uploaded the picture. He took a pull from it immediately. The Mayers are the Tubbs of the Club tailgating MVPs. But anyway, if you haven't given Snake River a shot, do it this week or make sure to do it by October 14th, homecoming against University of Montana.
Brian, why not give it 3 or 4 shots? Maybe 5 or 6.
Well, because I snip Snake River Stampede to enjoy it. So yes, take a shot, but at least have one drink where the point is to taste what is, again, to me, the best Canadian whiskey you get in Idaho State liquor stores.
Brian, it is time for score predictions. I'm going to jump in and just spoil it here. Guys, Martin, you would be shocked. Martin has picked Idaho to beat Eastern. Martin picks Idaho 42-30. Brian, you technically are in the lead of the pick'em, so I will give you the chance. Would you like to go first, or do you want me to go first? Entirely your call.
38-24, Idaho.
There we go. That answers that question. Guys, it's a clean sweep for Idaho here. I'm thinking Idaho scores 42 in this. I think Idaho is going to be out for blood. Not just because that's a really bad joke about a red turf. I think Idaho's got 42. I think Martin's right on that. I do think Eastern is going to probably put up about 28. So I'm going to go 42-28 total on that. Brian, that takes us to everybody's favorite segment, the weekly Big Sky Pick'em. To give a quick recap, Last week, Martin and I went 4-2. You went 5-1. The only game that you got wrong was the Montana loss to NAU. So let's start there. Let's talk about Montana, Brian. Idaho State versus Montana. What are we feeling?
Damn, this one is tough. Only because Montana looks lost. Like, there's clips circulating around on Twitter where the Montana O-line looks like they just gave up. I mean, that was the big takeaway and why there's so much anxiety in Grizz Nation right now, because the NAU sucks and Montana was shut out in the second half. One of the things that's going around in Grizz world is the belief that, look, Bobby Hauck is in a contract year and he allegedly turned down an extension last summer. So maybe he's just playing out the string. Maybe when the start of this year wasn't what he thought it would be, he was fine just saying, okay, well, they get a D-plus level effort out of me. People in the Grizz Nation don't know, because Bobby Hauck is famously an intense, pretty hardcore disciplinarian type of dude. And that's not what we're seeing out of Montana. Additionally, Idaho State looked pretty good against Northern Colorado. You know, they have a bit of an identity with the two quarterbacks. Hunter Hayes, as a quarterback, is the running threat for Idaho State, the only running threat. But I'm still going to pick Montana in this game. Idaho State, defensively, they just don't have the talent. And they looked good against Northern Colorado, but good God, everyone's going to look good against Northern Colorado. That's just a long road for Ed Lamb to hoe. So it was a good week for the Bengals last week, but I'm still picking Montana. Although I do truly think this game has a chance to be a lot closer in Idaho State's favor than you'd guess. And to me, honestly, this is the most important week in Montana's season. If they do not rebound against a bottom team like Idaho State, they're not rebounding this year.
But they will still be listed in the top 25, so they don't have a whole lot to worry about. Before I give my thoughts on this, I'm going to quickly jump in. The comment section, picking the Vandals game. Andrew Townsend mentioning that Duffer's Tavern has Vandals 34-24, Jason Mayer 40-17, Bart Holt 45-10. Steve Kurtz just says Vandals, baby. C. Hansen 38-20, Idaho. Again, guys, we're all, I mean, it's an Idaho podcast, but everybody's in the same thoughts here. Steve Kurtz ends up saying 52-10, Colin Hughes 45-31, Cap Dan 58-33-21. Looks like everybody's picking Idaho, guys. To quickly flip back over to the Montana game, Brian, I couldn't agree more. I'm going to pick Idaho State in this game only because I'm two games behind you and I knew you were going to pick Montana. So I'm going to go with ISU just because if I want a chance to win our pick 'em, this is where I got to pick it. And honestly, I would love nothing more than to see Bobby Hauck completely flame out in his second year or his second tenure at Montana. I would love to see it end in this hilariously disappointing fashion.
Okay. I'm going to throw it back to you to talk Idaho State for one more second after I reached that promise mark I'd do this. Idaho plays Eastern in hockey in Cheney. Puck drops at 7:04 p.m. both Friday and Saturday. And I'm quoting a good source on this. 100% chance you're going to see Mark yell at the refs. So if you're in Spokane, Cheney, Friday, Saturday, and you want to see some kick-ass hockey, go watch Idaho. The question I have for you now, hey, I get the whole pick a math thing, but obviously, like, you went opposite here because you think there's a better than 1% chance that Idaho State will actually win. Pretend the pick 'em doesn't exist. What in your mind are the merits you're leaning on for why you're okay gambling ISU?
Honestly, I think Cody Hawkins might be a better coach than Bobby Hauck is. Not that that's maybe saying that much today, but right now, Cody Hawkins does have that team at least attempting to finish games, and I don't know if Bobby Hauck has that. I don't know if Bobby Hauck is going to have that again. I have made a lot of jokes in my life at Cody Hawkins' expense because I think, again, the most nepotism quarterback of all time. I mean, we've made our jokes about gloves, but Cody Hawkins was even more egregious than gloves to me. That was there was no reason he should have been starting at a I don't remember if they were Pac-12 at the time or if they were in the Big 10 or Big 12, excuse me. I don't remember. It's been too long for me to remember exactly where Colorado fell in that. I have made a lot of jokes at Cody Hawkins' expense. I even thought, hey, again, he's just the offensive coordinator here because his dad's the head coach and la-di-da. He has again, not figured it out at Idaho State because there is still a very egregious lack of talent, lack of resources. Like, I don't know that you can ever turn Idaho State into a truly winning program, but Brian, I thought Idaho State was going to be completely terrible, and Cody Hawkins has those guys fighting, and that to me, I haven't seen any fight in Montana. They haven't looked impressive at all. I mean, I know that they were 3-0, but, and yes, Ferris State is the D2 national champion and honestly better than half the teams in the FCS, but they almost lost that game. Like, that is not what Montana historically has been. There's Brian jumping in the lost resources. We are down to 3 hoarder corners in the ISU porno dome. That is no longer the porno dome, because they finally took out those 70s seats and turned them into black and orange seats and are trying to like really brand the school as Idaho State Bengals instead of Idaho State. You probably don't want to sit in that chair. All of that to say, Brian, I think Cody Hawkins is a considerably better coach in 2023 than Bobby Houck is. And that is wild to me.
Yeah. To put a button on the Montana talk, Montana's offensive line is terrible, which is kind of the beginning of their offensive issues. The other being, I talked in the first Power Rankings episode about how early in that first Montana game against Butler, Montana looked like they were going to spread the ball out a little bit. No, dude, that's gone away. That happened for like 2 possessions. They're back to a worse version of the same garbage as last season. So Dallas, take your Brent Peace lap while you can.
Yeah, okay, fine. I'm going to do it. I went onto this show and said something along the lines of if I would stop being an Idaho fan if they hired Brent Peace, because I had looked into Brent Peace's career and it was not on a good trajectory. Let's put it that way. The guy got fired from his last 4 jobs and just fell down from Florida down to UTEP down to now here he is again, probably going to end up getting fired at Montana. Just have to pat myself on the back for that one. Thank you, Brian. Yeah, Brent Peace shuffling the deck chairs on the Titanic. Montana's not going anywhere. They got to cut bait, but I'm hoping that they do still get Bobby out to an extension, maybe a lifetime contract. Let's just see them suck for the next 20 years. I would love that.
Now, moving on to the next game, Dallas, which, hey, in Montana, Idaho State, the Power Rankings would narrowly pick Montana to win that. I'm going to give the wheel back to you just to shift here. Cal Poly versus UC Davis, who the Power Rankings would have no problem picking UC Davis.
Yeah, I'm going to take another moment to pat myself on the back here for this one, Brian. At one point in the off season, and we're not struggling to make shows, but you're doing a lot more of the hypothetical things, and there's not as much like strong, stringent things to talk about. You posed the question to me of what's more interesting, Sam Heward going to Cal Poly or Mickey Mental being named the Weber State head coach. And I said at the time, Mickey Mental, way more intriguing to me. It's going to have like real impact. We don't know what Cal Poly is going to do. And really what I meant there was, guys, if an FBS 5-star quarterback is transferring, not from UW down to like, I'll just say Boise State. That's a shitty Mountain West school. Down to then like, I don't know, somebody in Conference USA, and then 4th and 5th year, they're getting down to the big sky. Like, okay, hey, things just aren't working out for him. But if a guy goes from being a 5-star recruit, family legend, to you're at Cal Poly, not Montana, not Montana State, which again, he wouldn't want to be at Montana, but like, you're not going to a premier school in the big sky. You're going to Cal Poly. Like, there is obviously something there that is not 5-star material. And so far to me, Brian, I have not seen anything out of Cal Poly. I know we were really hoping that the Bo Baldwin experiment was going to kickstart things. He's obviously out, and he's also lost play calling duty already at Arizona State. Paul Wolf hasn't taken the leap that we were hoping Bo Baldwin's 3rd year would be. Again, it's first year of Paul Wolf, and there's the transition stuff that's going on there, but Brian, there's nothing about Cal Poly that is impressive to me. Cal Poly is absolute butt cheeks.
Yeah, Davis is going to win this. The Sam Heward takeaway to me is just a broader takeaway for a future understanding of Big Sky transfers. In the time Idaho's been in the Big Sky, so 2018, there have been 3 former 5-star quarterbacks who've come to the Big Sky. Travis Johnson came to Montana State from Oregon, and Travis Johnson didn't even play quarterback at Montana State. They moved him to receiver, the right call. We've had Dylan McCaffrey at Northern Colorado, now Sam Heward, who he certainly has arm talent, but he's a head case. So he makes one mistake. Mistakes 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 are right around the corner. You look at his stats minus the NAIA game, 2 touchdowns, 3 picks thrown for under 500 yards in 3 games, 2.5 games technically, because he left early with injury last week against Portland State. But just the big takeaway for me is 5-star quarterbacks dropping down to the Big Sky. They're probably dropping down for a reason. It's because there's some version of damaged goods that a higher level G5 teams think is terminal.
Yeah, for anybody that's honestly a sicko like I am, all you have to do is compare this to JT Daniels. JT Daniels, also former 5-star recruit. Now, he was a number one recruit. I don't believe Sam Heward was a number one recruit. But JT Daniels has gone from USC to Georgia to West Virginia to Rice. Yes, maybe USC to Georgia isn't necessarily a step down because we've all seen what Georgia has done the last couple of years. But going from USC to Georgia to West Virginia to Rice, is that the expected transition you'd see out of a 5-star quarterback that just hasn't found his place in major college football? Well, you expect to see out of a guy that truly is the talent of a 5-star.
Well, Daniels went to Rice to follow in the steps of Jake Constantine.
I was really hoping you were going to get to that joke, because that was the whole reason I brought up JT Daniels as the example quarterback. Speaking of that, Brian, let's talk Northern Colorado, Weber State.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that is fitting. There's really no other way to describe what this game is going to be.
Northern Colorado's terrible. They're going to lose. Weber State is going to probably take out all of their anger of last week's 40-0 loss to Montana State out on Northern Colorado. I guess the thing to watch is, look, Damon Bankson for Weber, he's their top running back. He's one of the top 3 or 4 running backs in the Big Sky. Wouldn't be shocked if he puts up another all Big Sky or Big Sky Player of the Week type of numbers. He was Big Sky Player of the Week offensively, I think week 1 or week 2. But look, I just don't think Weber can pass enough against good teams, but they're going to be strong enough on the ground defensively to beat the hell out of someone like Northern Colorado. Because look, Idaho State just beat Northern Colorado by 2 scores.
Brian, there have been talks about Kylan Weissner about just not being really any good, unfortunately.
On the Big Sky Power Rankings episode every single week.
Unfortunately, I hate to rag on the kid. Like, we try not to rag on the athletes. They're like, they're kids. I remember being a college kid. Like, it's hard enough trying to figure yourself out and figure out what you want to do with your life and the person you are while also trying to play major college football. But Brian, I feel like Weber State, it's not going to matter who's a quarterback. They could trot you or me, the broken shells of our bodies out there. And there is just so much more talent at Weber than there is at Northern Colorado. We had hoped that Ed Lamb was going to come in and, hey, Ed McCaffrey was just playing favorites and maybe they'll become respectable. Certainly not the case. That is a long rebuild in there.
Weiser is completing 50.5% of his passes, and that counts a D2 game this year.
Are you saying that's not very good, Brian?
I'm saying it's number 13 in a league that has 12 teams.
Yeah, I think that's the epitome of not good. So just like this game, not good, we're going to move on. Top 5 Portland State taking on actual top 5 Montana State.
This is not going to be close. Montana State, who, like, hey, 1 second ago, we just said Weber lost 40-0. Well, Montana State won their game 40-0 without Tommy Mellott playing quarterback. I don't think this is going to be close. I guess the intrigue here, and I hate to use intrigue when talking about top 5 Portland State, is this is the second game of the season where we can kind of gauge if what Portland State is. They murdered Cal Poly. So, hey, safe to say Portland State's not the worst team in the league. I'm not buying into Portland State annihilating Cal Poly because Cal Poly is terrible, but they're probably the least known quantity in the Big Sky relative to us entering week 5.
Mm-hmm. Brian, I have.
So Montana State, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I think Montana State could lose 3 more quarterbacks and they would still win this game by 35. This is just not going to be fun. I think, if you're Coach Barnum, you're thinking, man, we really should be getting paid for this ass kicking. I think that's what's going to happen this weekend. Nothing else intriguing to me about.
Well, the Portland State is a run heavy team. Their quarterback Dante Sacheret averages fewer than 100 yards passing per game this season. But I mean, do you think Portland State's good enough to run on Montana State when there's no concern about being beat deep? No, of course not.
God, no. It's going to be ugly. Obviously, guys, if you couldn't tell, Idaho Eastern is the game of the week in the Big Sky. Shout out to producer Martin here. He's usually in the background filling out all of our pick 'em stuff so that I can sit here and kind of drop comments on the screen and call out people's scores. Brian, I don't know how you did. Again, shout out to Nick Weber, the McCaffrey of episodes. I don't know how you guys got through that with occasionally mentioning the comment section, because I have to apologize, guys. I completely forgot all about it. I see all the comments here, and there's so many for me that I'm just in a quick scroll. Just about everybody picked Davis. I think actually everybody picked Davis, obviously. Everybody picked Weber. Everybody picked Montana State. Just about everybody picked Montana. There, you know, the few comments of, hey, there is an
Steve offense. Steve Kurtz with a controversial pick that Weber will have zero safeties on long snaps. Which is actually not that controversial. Like, there were two games Weber had issues last season, but what Steve's alluding to is the four safeties from long snapper against Montana State in 2022, a feat that, I mean, that's like Cal Ripken Jr. level. I don't think anyone's going to come close to touching that record anytime soon. No. Right. For those taking notes, because I know you guys do, the power ranking so far would have picked Davis, Montana narrowly, Montana State, Weber State, and Idaho. We still have one hell of a game to talk about.
Brian, the actual game of the weekend. NAU on a winning streak against Sacramento State on a losing streak.
Obviously, look, Sacramento State is going to rebound Northern. So one of the things Bobby Houck said that was kind of interesting in his press conference after Montana lost is that what NAU did offensively against Montana State looked nothing like what NAU had done the previous 3 weeks. So what Montana prepped for, it was not what was actually on the field. Adam DeMonte has taken over as starting quarterback. Kai Milner, I don't know if he was injured or what's going on, but I talked about this on the power rankings in the second half garbage time against Utah Tech. DeMonte played, and NAU did put up some points against the third and fourth and fifth stringers of Utah Tech. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. But then NAU did pick up a win against Montana. So if you live in Flagstaff, you're probably saying, hey, Chris Ball figured out something the last six quarters. Maybe they can put a scare into Sacramento State. I don't think that's going to happen. I think Sacramento State's a good football team. I don't think NAU defensively is going to be able to make Caden Bennett pay for the four or five pickable passes. He absolutely, the four or five, oh my God, pickable passes. He's going to throw every single game. Sacramento State is going to rebound. They're still a good football team, even though they lost to Idaho. So Sacramento State, pretty easy.
What's the saying? Take them out back behind the woodshed. That's what this feels like to me. This is the NAU had the highlight of their season last week, and this is going to be the crushing blow of reality right in their nose. This is going to be really bad. This is actually more interesting to me. Captain 58 jumping in saying, real question is how many NAU players are going to be intentionally injured by Sacramento State players mad about the loss last week? Maybe more points than NAU is going to score. That's really about all the feedback I got.
Reasonable. I was here while you were doing that. Because I don't even know who the dude's name is, because the guy who tried to injure Ricardo Chavez with a pretty obviously dirty play against Idaho, the dude's been at Sacramento State since like 2012, and he has like four catches in that time, so I don't know what the dude's name is. And I'm officially done looking up the guy's name. But I'm more interested in Colin Hughes saying Chris Ball's lifetime contract is complete after last week's win at University of Montana.
Well, I mean,
against Montana.
Yeah. Again, the highlight of his career, I think the highlight of really NAU fandom over the last God knows however many years.
Jason Mayer, part of our crack research team, saying the Sacramento State player who's going to qualify for AARP next year is Dow McClintock.
Mark Drivelpiece also mentioning 15 catches in his career at, there's a time and place to like to get into it with people on Twitter, but going after a kicker on Twitter that has been player of the week multiple times in his career, and then you're a guy who got more attention on Twitter than you ever have from any of your teammates or quarterbacks, maybe not a great look. But again, they're dumb kids. Like, most of us were dumb when we were in college.
Not a dumb kid. He's like my age. He's been there forever.
That's okay. That's a good point. He is, you know, a super COVID senior. So, you know, I was bald by then. So yeah. Okay. He's not a young kid, but still, like, don't go harass the kid on Twitter, but it is fun to go see if you can find any screenshots. Cause he backed down on a lot of that stuff real fast after doubling and tripling and quadrupling down on it until he realized he was beaten by the internet. Tauzarian McClinton is actually his name.
Can I bring up one thing that was caught? I want to talk about what Colin said real quick for about Chris Ball lifetime contract, because we haven't done our version of the Mountaineer Minute for a long time. And our Mountaineer Minute focuses on a western part of a state that is not on the East Coast. If you're an NAU fan, are you both stoked about that win against Montana because it's a win, but also like feeling that Zach Kloss PTSD we had last season of, God damn it, if he gets a win, he's back. Because I don't think NAU's figured anything out. I mean, Montana's effort was catastrophically terrible. But from the NAU fan perspective, like, I mean, that's honestly where I land on it. It's like, oh my God, he's going to be back.
I wish Casey Everett would bring back the NAU sports show just for one week, because I would love to ask him that question, because it feels to me, just on the outside looking in, it feels exactly like Zach Kloss PTSD Stockholm syndrome all over again. Just like, he's gonna just be here so long, you're gonna learn to love him. He's gonna be the next Coach K if we give him 25 more years, which was apparently the plan when they hired him.
He just needs more time.
He does just need more time, but
yeah, Chris Ball is a super nice guy.
But Brian, we do not have Trevin here to keep us on the right track.
No, we don't. By the way, last comment section thing, and then we do need, look, before we close, we got to talk about Tap the Keg. It's going to be October 13th, the Friday before homecoming. It's at the Dan O'Brien Track and Field Complex. That's right outside the Kibbe Dome. Early pricing for tickets ends on September 25th. Right now, tickets are $25. And look, this is an Idaho Oktoberfest. You're going to have Oktoberfest themed foods, a bunch of Oktoberfest-inspired beers, ciders, ton of drinks to have a good time. The event was fantastic last year. It's homecoming weekend, so you know it's going to be busy as hell this year. Grab your tickets. If you grab your tickets right now at early pricing at go.uidaho.edu/tap the keg.
There we go. One more time for those in the back. go.uidaho.edu/tap the keg. We will have that again. Like always, it will be in the podcast description. It will be in the YouTube comments. You can see it. Brian, any final thoughts about any of the Big Sky games this weekend? Any final thoughts about Idaho Eastern in particular?
Well, first, congratulations to listener Eric Stang, who says he's going to qualify for AARP next year. So you can call McClintock and he can tell you about reaping the benefits. But no, dude, it's another huge week for Idaho. Look, if Idaho picks up a win, we just haven't talked about this, I think, on purpose. Idaho picking up a win against Eastern would be the third good win on Idaho's resume. Most good playoff teams do not have more than two, at max three, good wins, just because of how FCS schedules happen to shake out. Mm-hmm. So a win here, Idaho, look, the paradigm is no longer if Idaho's going to make the playoffs. The paradigm is, what does Idaho have to do to get a seed, and how good a seed can Idaho get? That's to me what Idaho truly is playing for. I love the, as Cap Dan calls it, the janky Chisco Cup. But that's the takeaway, dudes, is Idaho can put themselves in the driver's seat for a bye in the playoffs. That you don't need more stakes than that.
Yeah, just for anybody that doesn't have the schedule memorized or easily on hand, if you know, you're just listening to this podcast in the car. So again, Idaho currently 3-1, lost to FBS Cal, win over FBS Nevada, win over number 4 Sac State, a win against number 19 Eastern Washington. Means you're looking at, again, 4 wins, one of those being an FBS win, and you've still got Cal Poly, Northern Colorado, and Idaho State on the schedule. it would have to be a considerably massive faceplant to not make the playoffs, because this is a team, again, those are big enough wins that 6 wins might be able to get you in on the fringe. 7 wins, obviously, you're in. Realistically, Idaho should not lose to Idaho State, Northern Colorado, or Cal Poly. So then you're talking Montana, Montana State, Weber State, all for seeding purposes and hoping to get that bye.
No, Idaho picks up a win this week. Bare minimum, the floor should be 8 wins for this team, potentially 9, which relative to playing 2 FBS OOC games in an 11-game schedule, dude, that's huge.
Yeah, pretty impressive stuff, guys, from Jason Eck in year two. This is everything we could have ever hoped for. 2 years ago when we were doing this show and we went back to Cheney 2 years ago, and again, Aaron Best and the Stay Salty and Brian's dumpster fire gif and all of these things that happened about, holy shit, Idaho has completely lost it. Paul Petrino's lost the team. Everything has melted down. Here we are 2 years later, and we're talking about Idaho as one of the 5 best teams in the FCS, and honestly, beating FBS teams on regular occasion, I think, at this point. This is a wagon, guys. This is... And if you're not into FCS football, you know, I get it. But guys, this is one hell of a program and one hell of a team. Show the support. Brian, with that, go Vandals.
Go Vandals.